Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
How long are you emerging? Shouldn't they be emerged by now?
That's not our show. It's the other show.
Yeah, I know.
They need to come up with a new name
for
it.
Shouldn't they be emerged by now?
I would think so. Don't you think so?
Well, they've been emerged. They're emerging podcasts.
We really, I mean, we're
going on a while.
We had I'll let you in a little inside baseball.
Oh, good.
We desperately would like to change the name of our podcast.
Why? Just because it's been sold to every other city in the country?
Well, I don't know. Somebody thought it was a good idea to give it to everybody else. Doesn't make any sense.
Why don't you call it the Baskin Podcast?
No,
with Daryl Ryder.
No, that's not it. I mean, there are other. Daryl has some pretty good ideas. I can't tell you the names. But Daryl had one last week. I was like, that's a much better name. Instead, we just give it to everybody else. Let's just do that. It's always game day in Cleveland. It's always game day in Buffalo. It's always game day in like 30 other cities. I mean, seriously.
Hey, man, it works.
Like zero creativity there. All right, let's do this. I want to talk about the Browns. They're still in the middle of OTAs. We bring in a super friend of the show, a guy that gets it, understands it, and knows all about the Browns and OTAs. He is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. His name is John Greco. What's up, John?
John.
What's up, gentlemen? Long time no talk. It's good to be with you.
I have so many questions about the Browns, but you know my burning question to ask you is, what did you grill out over the weekend for Labor Day? Memorial Day. I'm off by
Nothing fancy. We had a wedding Sunday. So I was playing a lot of golf and eating out and at the wedding and everything. And then Monday we just kept it simple, burgers and dogs with all the proper fixings. Just kind of kept it easy and did it the right way.
You're not too far from I'm surprised you're not over at Mirfield checking out some of the golf over there.
You know what? I have to drive through there to take my kids to school, which is an absolute nightmare. And I'm working today and tomorrow, so, just haven't had a chance to get over there, and then we're out of town for the weekend, so it's just one of those things I'm going to miss out on it this year. Probably watch on TV.
You never know. Somebody could use a bodyguard. You could always step in.
Absolutely. And the funny thing is I played the country club at Mirfield the other day, and then everybody thought it was the tournament course.
Right.
So everybody's like, oh, my God, how'd you get on there? How was it? How was the rough? And I didn't really feel like explaining to everyone that it wasn't that course. So I just kind of went with it. I was like, you know what? I just have good connections. It was treacherous, sinister, rough. But I'm here to tell everybody now I'm coming clean. I didn't play that course.
Yeah, just come off wearing like a light blue blazer like all the members are out there. Nobody will know the difference. You can pick those up at any one of those discount places for like 20 bucks. Yeah.
Well, absolutely.
Came from
absolutely.
No big deal.
That's beautiful. John, OTAs, I think everybody thinks, all right, this is a practice and, you know, it's casual and blah, 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 blah. What benefit do they serve? Do they put everything in place so when training camp starts, you don't have a whole lot of learning? What exactly is the point?
They've definitely changed since I've left the league. But I think that they are extremely valuable because, you know, they've limited the contact. I remember they used to be a little bit more physical than we would like to have had when I played, but it just gets your body, you know, used to hearing the snap count, hearing the play, working on combinations with guys next to you. For the skill guys, you're running routes, you're getting the timing down. Defensively, you're getting the calls, the communication ironed out, buttoned up. So it's really like kind of a mini dress rehearsal And there's really no stress. You don't have to worry about going out there and making too many mistakes, because this is the time of year we get to clean those things up. And then, you know, come training camp, when the physical part is added in, that just kind of helps you, rev up and amp up toward the season. But, you know, I enjoyed this time of year. I thought it was great because, you know, you're coming off of the off season where you're training and you're staying in shape, but you've kind of, wiped your mind clean of football. And you're like, you know what, I'm just going to focus on staying healthy, getting in shape, getting ready for the off season. And now it's like, okay, here's the refresher. What's new? What wrinkles are we adding to the offense, to the defense? Is a new guy playing next to me around me, trying to build that chemistry on the fly. So I thought it was, they were very valuable.
John, how much work does the offensive line have to do with Deshaun Watson to get better? And I say that, and better might not be the right word, to get in rhythm. Because we saw how disjointed it looked, especially coming off of Jacoby Brissett, and that the timing and the tempo has to change for them. So how hard is it and how difficult is it knowing that? And then I'll even throw another wrinkle in there. How much of a benefit is it that you have the entire O-line coming back intact?
Well, I'll go in reverse. That's a big benefit that you have all of those guys returning, and they are a very good offensive line when healthy, and as we all know. But kind of to answer the first part of it, and, you know, we saw with Jacoby, I think how fluid he ran the offense was a pleasant surprise. And everybody knew he was capable of running the offense and executing, but there really were no setbacks or you know, miscommunication, anything like that, that were self-inflicted wounds. And then when Deshaun came in, it was just a different kind of vibe, a different feel, and it almost seemed like there was a lot of, you know, anxious feeling. So I think everybody knew the amount of pressure that he was under, the level of expectation. So I think everybody was just playing a little bit tight. Now they have this full off season. Everything that happened in the past is gone. It's a clean slate as far as the Browns offense moving forward with him. And I think everybody has that mindset and focus. So, you know, as training camp is approaching, this is the time of year where they can work on their chemistry. They can work on their timing, their rhythm, and the center. It starts with the center quarterback exchange. They're used to hearing his snap count now. They're used to hearing how he checks plays on the line of scrimmage, what he's thinking, and then the offensive line can go about their business and say, you know, these are the kind of things Deshaun sees with, you know, different defensive looks, and you know with Jim Schwartz there now, they're getting a fresh start on defense to, you know, see some new names, faces, fronts, looks. So this will benefit both sides of the ball with seeing a new defense and new scheme, and then defensively, obviously trying to stop, a mobile quarterback, a playmaking quarterback. So I think it's going to be a great offseason for them.
John, I want to take you back to the six games Deshaun Watson played last year. I was hoping at the end of those six games we would all think, yep, okay, he's still the same guy that he was in Houston. I don't know if we can do that. What did you think of the six games he played and his work in them?
You know, we talked about this, you know, last season when we were, you know, witnessing that. And I think, you know, there was a certain level of disappointment. But at the same time, I was trying to be realistic with my expectations, given the fact that he was away from football for so long. So I don't know if we all expected him to look like the Deshaun that we saw in peak performance in Houston. I was caught in between wanting to see that and expecting to see that. I definitely wanted to see a little bit more of it, but I just think you saw a player that was trying to go out and win the hearts of the fans and earn the respect of his teammates and really just try to rally everyone and try to win some games. And, you know, they fell a little bit short of that, and I think that's what made this offseason so nerve-wracking for people, because if they would have just trended upwards going into the offseason, I think, you know, a lot of people, that there would be less doubt and there would be, you know, a lot less focus on, hey, you know, these first few games, we need to see a drastic improvement from what we saw last season. So that's kind of where I'm at. I think what you saw out of him, and maybe, you know, what I said in the first comments, where I think everybody was just, you know, a little bit buttoned up, trying a little bit too hard to trying to make a play and make that big splash. Whereas now, when things get to slow down and they get that full off season with him and Kevin Stefanski tailors the offense, whatever he's doing to try to tweak things and adjust things. I'm curious to see what they look like. And, you know, are we going to see a lot of him in the preseason with the starting offensive line? I'm guessing no, just because of the way the current NFL operates. But I'm really curious to see what they roll out there week one and what it looks like.
When a guy doesn't show up for OTAs, what does that mean?
You know, I don't care. Like, if Joel Bitonio and Nick Chubb don't show up for OTAs, I'm jealous and you know, good for them. So that's where I'm at with that.
Is that just, John, is it just a big deal because, I don't know, the media makes it into a big deal, or is it a big deal because high school coaches may have made it a big, well, you don't have to be there, but I want to see who really shows up kind of deal. You know, why does that become a storyline?
I think we make it into a lot bigger issue than it needs to be. You know, it's hard for me to say it because I needed to be there personally because I needed to work in the off season. Mm-hmm. I wasn't at the level that some of the guys that, you know, choose to sit out of OTAs were. So for me, it was like, that would be a horrible message that if I sat out and I wasn't that caliber of player, and you know, that's just not good for business. So the guys that can get away with it, they're you know, trying to, you know, take away any unnecessary risk and chance for some, you know, fluke injury that's going to cause a setback. And then B, you know, they've done it before. They know what OTAs are about. There's nothing new that they need to hear or see. But you know, on the other side of that coin, a lot of guys that could have very easily sat out of OTAs and just stayed home and golfed and hung out with their families, they would show up because maybe they thought, hey, I'm going to try to, you know, build the chemistry or have the camaraderie, or maybe it just sends the overall right message to the organization. We're trying to get this thing going the right way, in the right direction. We're trying to win games, and I'm going to try to be a part of it. So I don't judge guys either way. I would always say I was more jealous than anything because, you know, hey, they deserve it. They've done enough to where they think, hey, you know, I could still be the caliber of player that the team is counting on me to perform and expects me to be without being here during OTA. So I'm in a judgment-free zone with that, and I think we've made a big deal out of that for far too long.
That was well said. I like that a lot. As an offensive lineman, no offensive lineman is a little guy, but as an offensive lineman, when you see a guy like DeJuan Jones, who the Browns drafted out of Ohio State, at 6'8", 360 plus, anyway, what do you think of a guy like that, John, when you see a guy with that kind of size as a fellow offensive lineman? What goes through your head?
Well, guy, I love big people. I'm fascinated by big people. I think it's, you know, I'm obviously in that category, and now that I'm just in a civilian, I'm the biggest person that I associate with. So I'm like, man, this really sucks. I'm at the pool, and I'm the only offensive lineman at the pool. Well, you know, when you're you know, surrounded by other people that are 330 pounds, you feel comfortable. You feel like you're one of the guys. So a guy of that stature and physical size, it for me, the way that the big people like that can move and run, and they have the footwork, I think it's such an awesome thing to see. So, yeah, I think it's very cool, and I'm curious to see what he's going to be able to do on the field.
John, as always, you know, we appreciate talking to you, and we love talking football with you. You're the man. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Guys, it was fun. Talk to you soon.
All right, former Browns offensive lineman John Greco joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. We'll touch on what he had to say, and I don't know about you, but I'm watching the Guardians score a couple runs, man. Fun, huh? Yeah, I think so. 216-474-0092, that's the number to call, or hit us up on Twitter at CLE Talking Heads. Baskin Phelps. Get to 22 runs the last nine games. Amazing.
Spread,
I mean, to think
out,
that they – it took that long to try to get back to where they need to be as far as just trying to score some runs. And it's just been frustrating to watch some of these games where it's 1-2, maybe a third run. But last night, man, they got into double digits on a win. They scored 12 runs. And they won by, what, 4 runs, which is something else that hasn't happened very often. But twice in this last series, you look at the opener against Baltimore, where they won 5-0. I mean, there was a significant spread between the win, where they didn't have to go to extra innings. And, you know, they won by more than 2 runs, which doesn't seem to be something that the team's been able to do a lot of this season, which they haven't. You had to go back to, like, the first week of the season to go back to a game where they scored by, what, more than 2 runs, second game of the season there. So, I mean, so they were able to, you know, manhandle Baltimore in 2 of the 3 games. And even in the game they lost, you know, they still put 5 on the board. An unusual outing for Cal Quantrill, where he gave up 8. Also unusual that Bieber gave up runs last night, too.
A lot of runs.
But this is a big series coming up for them against Minnesota. 4 games. I keep saying it just because you don't play them as many times as you used to in the past. But are they on the right track right now? Do you feel like the offense is going in the right direction? Feels that way to me. You tell me.
Oh, okay. Yes.
That's your way of saying, Andy, don't get too excited. That's what it feels like.
I hate saying this because you don't like it. I tried not to get too bummed out about the offense, you know, when it wasn't going well, and kept trying to hang on to, okay, well, it's early. They should be warming up, you know, blah, blah. That whole line of thing that we all think is BS, though it turns out to be true most of the time. You know, I mean, I didn't think Andrés Giménez was going to hit 220 all season. Well, he's now at 242. Yay! Okay, so
he's exceeding your expectations.
No, my expectations are higher than that, but it's just this. Okay, you know they're not. Yesterday was an aberration. Okay, you're not going to score 12 runs and get 17 hits very often. First time they've scored that many all year, and most hits since like last July or something like that. That's an aberration. What this team needs, Andy, is 4, 5, 6 runs a game on a much more regular basis. And I think they can do that, and I think they're on their way to that. And I think yesterday was a nice step, and this series was a nice step. The one thing I really liked about yesterday, I think there are some really key guys in the lineup who you need to have hitting well. And I thought those guys had big games yesterday. I think Stephen Kwan's critical. He's your leadoff guy. Right? Get on base. He had 3 hits. Scored 3 runs.
3 homers yesterday. That hasn't happened.
Well, and that's nice. Jose Ramirez gets 3 hits yesterday. Josh Naylor gets 4 hits. Your cleanup hitter had 4 hits and he drove in 6. Okay, that's a really big day. But still, that's your guy coming on. Josh Bell hit a home run. Great. And when that guy hits a home run, he just looks great.
Sure.
He's got to be better than he's played here and that he played in San Diego, right? He couldn't have just lost it. And I say that because he was good in Washington, then got traded to San Diego. So it's not like last year was, you know, complete bad year. It wasn't. Arias hit a shot. Good. You know, I'm a big Oscar Gonzalez fan. That's if it's not going to be Oscar, somebody out there in right field, please hit. Somebody, please. If it's Gabe, that's fine. And Giménez getting 4 hits, going 4 for 5, and he's really big because he was terrific last year. And he's one of your guys. You gave him a big contract. You need him, and you need him to play well. You know, his defense is going to be there. We know that. He's got to hit decently. He doesn't have to be great, but he's got to hit better than he was. And yesterday might be a nice step in that direction. In fact, the last couple of games, nice step in that direction for Andres. So if you're not going to allow yourself to get too down, Andy, when it wasn't going well, and I kept trying to not do that, then I'm not going to let myself get all giddy because they scored 12 runs. But I love the way they're trending. And you've pointed that out, you know, how over the last several games they've been trending in the right direction offensively. You know, it's easier to hit when it's warm. That sounds silly, and you don't want to pin your hopes on that. I would still like to see them make a trade and get a bat in here or figure something out.
I'm not going to let one start, you know, change my mind on what's going on with Bieber. And, you know, oh, we got to get rid of him because he gave up 7 earned last night. I don't think that's the the right approach to the game itself, especially when you go back and look at what he's done all season. He's given you the opportunity to win in every game this year, except for maybe yesterday. But does that make you – is this just like a bad time to give up seven earned in one game? I don't know how you could – how anybody in their right mind who is in a front office in Major League Baseball can go, well, we were thinking about trading him, and now we're going to trade him for sure because he gave up seven runs.
No.
On a given afternoon game in Baltimore against the Orioles. That's not why. That's not why you're going to trade him. The reason you're going to trade him is you think there is no way that you're going to be able to re-sign him. That's what it's all about. And because his numbers are saying, I'm going to give you the chance to win every game. And that's what your number one guy is all about.
If you want to, you can look at two of his last four starts and say, see, he's slipping. You should get rid of him now. Because against the White Sox back on May 16th, he gave up, six earned on 12 hits and didn't get out of the fourth, or didn't get out of the fifth.
Right.
Went 4 2/3. And then did the same thing yesterday, had a similar kind of outing. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to look at he's the guy who gives you a chance every time he goes out there. And so if you're going to trade him, it's exactly for the reason that you said. Because you don't think he's going to be back at the price you want to pay him.
Where do you think he's at right now, though? I do think that we've seen signs of, hey, he's not the same Shane Bieber we saw a little while ago. He's a reworked Shane Bieber. He doesn't have what he had a couple years ago. I just don't see it. Velocity will tell you that. That he doesn't have the same as what he had a while back, but he's still smart enough and just is such a good pitcher that he's going to give you a chance to win. And we have this plethora of pitchers that are going to be able to pitch. Savali tomorrow and McKenzie. What was the story in the 2020 was that he's going to be talking to Tito here real soon to see where he's at. So, and McKenzie isn't. I mean, it looked like he was super close, and then all of a sudden it sounds like he had a setback. So we'll see how soon until we see him.
Well, the velocity tells you one thing. There's something else about Shane that I think tells us even more, but it's probably based off of velocity and then the difference, you know, between his pitches. He was a real strikeout pitcher, and he's not now. His second year, Andy, when he pitched a ton of innings, 214, he struck out 259.
Wow.
And when he won the Cy Young, he pitched, 77 innings and struck out 122. So it's like he was striking out 1 point whatever per inning. You know, in the Cy Young season, it was more than 1.5 per inning. And this year, in 75 innings, he has just 53 strikeouts. So he's not even striking out one per inning. And that's okay for some guys, but that's what Shane's done more, you know, in his career, more so. And last year, averaged just under one strikeout per inning. So as the velocity has dropped, so have the strikeout totals, which means you've got to get guys out in different ways. And he's still good. He's still good at it. And I would still love to have him here. But again, that might be one of those self-scouting things where if you're the Guardians, Andy, and you know, he had the injury in 2021, you look at it and you think, well, is it time that we think we've seen the best of Shane? And even though he might still be a very good major league pitcher, he's not quite the same dominating type of pitcher that he used to be. And you feel comfortable making a move because you think, well, if we had the guy from, like, you know, the first couple of years in his major league career when he was striking people out like crazy and everything else, maybe we'd pay that guy. But this is a different pitcher now. Different. I didn't say worse. He's different. And he might not be the kind of guy you want to make that investment in. And so I get it from that standpoint. Again, I would love to have him here because he's a guy who gives you a chance to win. But that's a decision that Mike Chernoff and Chris Antonetti are paid to make, and they're usually pretty good at making those decisions. So let's see.
Maybe one of the other reasons I'm kind of looking at this series is that you don't see Bieber going up against Minnesota in these big games. Now, he's scheduled to go up against Boston at home on Tuesday night, which is, you know, it's Boston, so it'll be good. But, you know, if the trade deadline's at the end of the month, you're looking at, you know, a start against Boston, which leads you to the 6th. And then you're looking at the 11th for his next start against Houston. And then you just got to go 1, 2, 3, 5. So then you're looking at a start against Arizona and then maybe one more at the end of the month. So what, 4 or 5 starts until the trade deadline? Maybe 4 or 5 starts, and I wonder if that plays into what his future will be. I know that you don't want to sit here and play that game, but if people are saying, hey, maybe they need to go to a 6-man rotation when Savali comes back and McKenzie, and I don't think the Guardians are going to do that.
I don't either.
If you take him out, again, you're looking at, what, 5 starts before the trade deadline? And does that mean anything? I don't know.
Does this mean anything? You're only 3.5 out.
Well, that to me, that's the most important thing. If you think you're going to make the playoffs, then I think
you want... Or make a real run. You don't want to trade him, do you?
No, I don't. Why would you give up a number one unless you're getting some sort of everyday player that is definitely going to help you out right away? That's got to be the priority one on a trade like him. Somebody that's going to help the offense now.
Think about if you traded Bieber at this trade deadline.
And controllable contract, too. That's mm-hmm. another thing for this organization. Because they're not just giving up Bieber for nothing.
Right. If you trade him now, you have a hole in your rotation. Even though you have plenty of guys that you can put in the rotation, you have a hole because he's your best starter. And as you said, you better get somebody who can help you right now because you're taking something away from a team in contention. You better add something to a team in contention, or there's probably no reason to trade him now. You could trade him at the end of the season. You know, trade him over the winter, and then by then you're sure about Logan Allen. You're sure about Bibee, maybe Gavin Williams even, and you go from there. So I am in no hurry to trade that guy. None.
Yeah, I'm not either. And knowing that, so what do you do, Jeff? You're creating then the Bieber sweepstakes next year. So, or maybe in the off season, like, you know, obviously there's 3 points where your value for him is what you need to evaluate. You need to evaluate his, you know, where he is right now compared to the end of the month. That's one section. Then it's off season is the next. Mm-hmm. And then a year from now, because you still have him under control. So there's 3 windows really to kind of say, okay, here's what we're going to do with Bieber. We're in one of the windows now. And then we'll be in one in the offseason, and we'll be in one a year from now, too, if they don't trade him.
All right. I just received a text from a buddy of mine who's a college pitching coach.
Okay.
Think about this as we go to break. He says any guys that give you a chance to win are worth keeping. Agreed.
Agree with that.
But he says, however, because those guys aren't dominating, which Bieber's not doing right now, we need offense to help those above-average pitchers. Food for thought right there.
What do you think? Let me know. Also, Captain Phelps? What are we missing? 216-474-0092. Baskin and Phelps.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.